Just as you all know by now that today is a very special day, the special day in the Buddhist year. It's a Vaisak day. It celebrates the birth of the Buddha, the day the Buddha became enlightened, and also the day passed away. All supposed to have happened on the full moon day of May, which is today. It's every so often that the Friday night talk happens to fall on that one day. We are celebrating on Sunday, but this is actually the real day, the full moon night. And I thought I'd just mention a few of the things about Vaisak and how they affect our lives and how we can use some of the teachings to make ourselves better people and also have a better world. And interestingly, the first thing, which is the birth of the Buddha, for those of you who've ever wondered, you know, why you see in some temples a little picture or statue of the baby Buddha, you know, with his one finger up, like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever, which is what most people recognize it as. What actually is that doing? You know, according to the story, now, once the Buddha was born, he actually spoke. He said this was his last life, he's going to be a Buddha. And like many people coming from Western backgrounds, especially trained in science, you think, now what a myth that is, that no one speaks when they're born. But one of the things which this is teaching us, that maybe there are some weird things happen in the world. And as a monk, actually even as a young man, I loved weird stuff. Anything weird, I am interested in. And mentioning that many years ago, sitting here, there was a... I have to go back a little bit earlier. There was a couple from Perth. They were Westerners, no, Caucasians. And they came to Bodhinyana Monastery to see me because something strange had happened the night before. These weren't Buddhists. They were just a young couple who were shocked and spooked by one of those strange occurrences which they liked telling Buddhist monks about. What had happened was that they had just given birth to their second son, who was named Paul. Their elder son, about 3 years of age, was called Peter. And the evening before, they were just ready to tell their elder son, Peter, to go to bed. And this is exactly how they related it. They told Peter, go and say good night to your baby brother Paul, who'd just been born, maybe just out of hospital, 2-3 weeks, I don't know how long. So little Peter went to the carrier for the baby and said good night to his young brother. Good night, Paul. And Paul said good night, Peter, back. Which was very strange. Now, if ever things like that happen to you, you just stop whatever you're doing. You stare in disbelief. You don't interfere because you're wondering, did I imagine this or was it real? And without any prompting, the elder son repeated, good night, Paul. And this time with both mother and father paying full attention, focused, clear, not distracted, the little baby said again, good night, Peter. And of course, that was so weird, they came to see the monks. I don't know why it is monks, but I think it's probably because you know that we are very, very open-minded. And we have just some weird things. You know, what is really weird, we can actually explain because we're meditators, we know how the mind works, and we know there is such a thing as a previous life. But here the baby was actually speaking. And interestingly, when that baby spoke, one of the things they said, which is remarkable, that the baby did not speak in a baby's voice. Now, when a baby first speaks, they don't enunciate their their vowels or whatever in the same way an adult does. This was like an adult speaking, but it came from the baby's mouth. Weird. And when I started telling that story here many years ago, other couples came up to tell me that they had similar experiences. This was not just a one-off anomaly. I'm not sure if they're here this evening, but a Malaysian couple told me the same happened when they brought their child back from hospital. It spoke to them. And they were so shocked they would never tell anybody. But when they heard me say that these things happen, they came and told me, yes, that happened to them as well. But the best of all was what somebody said happened in the United States, in California. And this was in front of the midwives and the doctor who was delivering the baby in a hospital in California. Because on this occasion, when the baby came out of the womb, after a few minutes or so coming out from his baby's from his mother's tummy, apparently, and everybody saw this, it was recorded, the baby looked around and uttered the unforgettable words, "Oh no, not again." Imagine you have to go to school again. You know, you have to wear nappies again. You have to go through all over again. Oh, no, not again. And apparently that actually happened. So sometimes some of the things, you know, some of the myths which people say could never happen, sometimes I like to keep an open mind about some of these strange things, and that is as a trained theoretical physicist. You never just dismiss something, it can't happen. No, just if you see it, maybe it does happen. Maybe in very, very rare cases, people have enough. What they call in Buddhism the mindfulness, the awareness, when they're born, enough to recall their previous life, how to speak and know what's going on, to have the conceptual framework to form language and to actually to speak to people, even when they're born. And if there's anyone else who's had experience like that, please come and tell me afterwards. You're just amassing all this information. I know you'll be scared of telling other people. They'll think you're crazy, it couldn't have happened. That's the problem. Which is one of the things which I get out of this. Sometimes we reject people's experiences just too easily. We say, it couldn't have happened, it can't have happened, I don't believe you, you're imagining it. But how many things in life are you didn't imagine it? It was true. And it's very interesting when these things happen to you. They're personal, you know it was true. There are some weird and strange things happen in this world. And they actually give the world a little bit more texture and interest. It's not just so flat, predictable and boring. Weird stuff happens. I know that I've seen these car stickers. Shit happens. I want to have a car sticker. Weird stuff happens as well. But what that's actually saying, you know, that whole story is, and I think that those of you who've had children, especially the mothers, when you first see that being, you know, on your tummy, how many of you really think that that's a new being, freshly minted, just a product of you and your partner? Of course, I've never given birth, not in this life. But I have enough understanding of these things and talked to many mothers who have actually known that this is not a new being at all. This comes with history. It comes with a past. It's got a character which is already pretty well formed. It's going to change and adapt over the next, you know, 20 years. But it's a being. And you can look in its eyes, you can feel its body move. That is something which is more than a product of you and your partner. And it's a fascinating insight to have, to realize that these people do come. Where they come from, you don't know. Where they go to when you die, you don't know. We're with each other for a certain amount of time, and it's a privilege to be in each other's company. As your privilege to be with this young being coming into this life, your son, your daughter, a very close being to you, for you to love and care for, and to wonder just how they develop through their years. It's a beautiful thing, birth, but it's not new. It's a continuation. And that whole idea of continuation, the rebirth, the reincarnation, the cycles of existence. And it's very hard to have a start and an end, but a cycle, a wheel, a circle which goes round and round. That describes life so much better, whether it's the earth going around the sun, whether it's this whole planetary system going around sort of the Milky Way, or whether, as I've said before from science, just that this is not the first universe. Even these universes get reincarnated, get reborn, universe after universe. It gives a sense of wonder at the vastness of nature. Yeah, you may go to a cliff and look at the ocean at night, during the daytime, and it's vast. And sometimes even looking at the sea, you just can't contemplate just how much ocean is out there on the earth. An incredible number of beings who live in that ocean. It's vast. But then you go to the next level and you look out into space at night. And the vastness of space just boggles your mind. And then you go to the next level, the vastness of universes, one after another after another. The size is just incomprehensible, which is beautiful, because one of the troubles of human beings, we try to grasp knowledge, to put it in a cage, to codify it in a library and think, now we've got it. Just like we try to capture tigers, we try to capture elephants, and when you do manage to capture them and put them inside a zoo, that's not a tiger, that's not an elephant. That's a caged being, which doesn't really display their true nature. When you set them free, and maybe these wonderful wildlife cameras, which can catch them as they really are. When we try and cage animals, they're not what they really truly are. Like when we try and cage the truth and try and capture it, try and codify it, try and think that now we know that's not the truth. We call that learning. One of my sayings, and I coined this saying when I was having a discussion with members of the British military. Weird, but they said they were Buddhists. And I thought, okay, you're in the British Army, you're Buddhist, you must be dentist or accountants or something like that. But no, these were people in the front line in Iraq. And I thought, how on earth can you be a Buddhist and point a gun at someone else and maybe even pull the trigger? They explained to me, and I was wrong, I learned. I had to expand and afterwards I told them I made a mistake, and I'm going to tell everybody what that mistake is. I let my learning, my understanding of Buddhism stand in the way of truth. You can't capture truth. That's just learning. So I told them, never allow your learning, your knowledge, to stand in the way of truth. You can't capture truth. And don't ever mistake what you know, what you've learned, as the real truth. Because the real truth will always amaze you, will always make you see more and deeper than you can ever learn. So that was one of the lessons which I got when you had someone like this baby infant supposed to be walking and talking. Impossible, so my learning said. But sometimes what you see in front of your eyes is truth, way beyond learning. That's why we like to extend ourselves, never thinking you've finished with knowing anything. Back to real life, so to speak. The person you live with, do you know them? If you do think that you know, you assume that you know the person you live with, your wife, your husband, there's no more relationship left. It's dead. You'll find in a relationship, there's always finding new parts about that person. Just like in your path of life, you're always discovering new things about yourself. Parts of you which you never thought existed. Skills, wisdom, which are always there but you never tapped into before. The path of life is a path of ever more discovery, never reaching the end. Because if you do reach the end, that is death. This is the great discovery of life. And it's wonderful because when you realize you don't know the person you live with, then you have a relationship. In the same way when you first go out with somebody, finding out who they are, finding out sort of, you know, their beautiful qualities. And that's the other thing which in my life, I've never found a person yet who doesn't have an amazingly beautiful qualities inside of them. Even the prisoners in jail, even the prime ministers and presidents who I've happened to meet, on the outside, they're bastards. On the inside, they're flowers. They're gorgeous inside. And it's just a matter of trying to get in there and just to see what you never expected. And that's with every human being I've ever met. So it's amazing that the person you live with, don't give up on them yet. Just go inside of them. See deeper in them. Never allow your learning, your knowledge, the experience and assumptions you have so far about that person to define them. That's not the truth. That's your learning and experience. The truth is far more than that. And the same with yourself. I don't know how many people have low self-esteem. They've judged themselves. They've sentence themselves, just like some judge in a court of law. How many people you read about in the newspapers have been sentenced unfairly? They've been judged and put in jail for things they never did. We even had that fellow, remember Andrew Mallard? He came here a few times. How many times people have been accused like that? How many times? Billions of times. And you have also been accused and judged of things which you never ever did. Never understanding you. It's so hard to judge another person. After a while I realized I just can't do that anymore. When you actually find out what a person did and why they did it, you really find out, what can you do? You can't judge them at all. I would have done probably the same or maybe worse in the same situations and conditionings. Now, you may reject that for other people, but I'm coming back to you. How many times you've been judged unfairly, even this past week? Probably many times. Why do we do that? It's totally unfair. Because judging a person is just making just too many assumptions, coming to a conclusion, and it's so cruel afterwards. So don't allow that judging, that learning, to stand in the way of the truth of who you really are. Many of you have been criticized, put down, said you're not good enough, say you're not successful enough, you don't sort of match, you don't sort of match up, you don't cut the mustard or whatever else it's called. Why do you believe all of that? You're much more than that, huge more than that. It's amazing when you touch that. touch what you don't know, what you haven't learned, what you haven't seen. The weird stuff about you. The truth, which is far greater than even you've seen, let alone what other people have seen about you. That gives you the opportunity to be kind, to accept, to be at peace with someone, to not judge them. How terrible it is to always come into the presence of a person and feel you're being judged, not loved for who you are. Again, I recall some experiences in my life. You've been very fortunate to have been a monk, because as a monk you've met some amazing people, people who you normal human beings won't get close to. Remember this wonderful monk in the northeast of Thailand many years ago. I went to see with all my questions. I wanted to ask him about Buddhism, about philosophy and life. You know what, you have all these questions. And when I went into this monk's presence, all those questions, they just evaporated. Your mind became so still and peaceful, there was no question left inside of you. He was one of these amazingly kind, wise old monks. The sort of monk or person or nun, whoever it happens to be, you're fortunate to meet, who once you get close to them, you feel you never want to leave, ever. There was a feeling, I just want to sit here and die here. I don't want to go anywhere else. This is it. Because you felt so accepted, so safe, so loved. And by loved, I mean no criticism at all. You accepted precisely what you for what you were, with all your warts, faults, and idiotic behavior. You were just loved for who you are, totally. Not criticized, not trying to be trained to be something else. You were just you, and that was more than good enough. Have you ever experienced that before? That total acceptance. That's what we call unconditional love. And I pause at the word unconditional, because many people experiencing love, but with strings attached. This is unconditional love. You're just loved for who you are, not like your parents who love you and they want to change you and train you and develop you, which is unfortunate, but they think that's their job. But this is like the love where you're totally, 100% accepted for who you are. And you get this wonderful sense of freedom and relaxation. I don't have to please anymore. I don't have to live up. I don't have to strive to do the right thing. You know the right thing. Has anyone ever told you what the right thing is? If they have, please let me know, because I've been trying to find out all my life what the right thing is I'm supposed to be doing. No, you just be. And when you experience things like that, you know just what freedom really means, what unconditional love is. And you get this wonderful insight. You don't have to be somebody. You don't have to go somewhere. Somebody wrote in a letter to me from UK. I hope they're listening this evening. Now, do you always have to leave a mark on this planet after you've left? Some edifice, something which you'll always be remembered for. Do you have to produce something to be valued? Sometimes people think that they need to have a legacy in this world. No, you don't need a legacy at all. You just need to be free and to be at peace. Leaving legacy is like leaving a scar on this planet Earth. The bell tower, Elizabeth Key, or whatever else people want to sort of big sort of ideas of their ego. You don't need that at all. Why are you doing that? Because you think you're pleasing other people. You think this is what I have to do. Is that what life is all about? To die and then be remembered by some monument or some other achievement you've done in life? If it is, most of you will fail. And even if you are a famous person, you've achieved something. after a couple of generations, people will forget you. All the cemeteries with all the beautiful headstones eventually crumble to dust, and no one knows that you even lived. I find that beautiful, empty. When you know that now, you can just be. You don't have to achieve. Have you ever been under pressure to achieve at work, as a woman, as a wife, as a husband? That sucks. I refuse to be a high-achieving monk. I'm just going to do what I like to do, and if you like it, fine. If you don't, all the same to me. And that's absolutely true. Some years ago, when the former abbot here, you know, he just went away, and I was stuck with this place, I actually just really looked at myself and said, okay, let's give it a try. If it works, great. I can teach, inspire people. That'd be wonderful. But if I really am very boring, no one comes to my talks, they think I'm stupid, that would be even better. Then I can just be a peaceful monk and disappear. They didn't mind what happened. So you're not trying to please people. And when you come into the presence of somebody who can do that for you and say, no, just be you. I just love you for who you are. I don't care what you are like. Isn't that beautiful? It's the unconditional part of the love. Now, can you do that to yourself? That's what the sort of Buddha did under the Bodhi tree. Can you totally be at peace with yourself for who you are? And have this, just like I can go into this years ago, go into the presence of this monk and feel totally accepted. When I was with him, yeah, I could feel that. But when I left, I was back to this old me. All these faults, all this stuff, all these problems. But then eventually you started to take what you learn. And this is not speech. This is not words and stuff you can write in a book. This is those emotional feelings, this truth which surrounded you, which you can never really put into words, which you struggle in front of a microphone to even describe. You do that to yourself. It's beautiful, unconditional acceptance. Yeah, you know, you've known me. I've got all my idiosyncrasies and just strange ways of doing things. And, you know, fat, sort of old. Yeah, but I love myself as I am. I wouldn't want myself to be any thinner. Isn't that nice when you can accept yourself? And you make a mistake and you laugh as well. When, I even wouldn't call it love. You like, you respect who you are. You know what I said earlier during the meditation? You're a friend to your body, which means you don't abuse it. You know, you can learn how to relax, and the body just doesn't get any pains anymore. You can just treat it like a friend. Sometimes I do that to myself. I treat myself like my best friend. And when you're a friend, I don't worry about it. You know, she'll be right. You don't have to be perfect all the time. No one is perfect. Can you treat yourself like you treat others that way? And be kind to yourself? And if you can, you know the difference between your learning and the truth. Unfortunately, we learn so much in this world. We accept all this conventional knowledge, just what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to behave and how we're supposed to do things and what we're supposed to achieve in this life. And does that really fit what real life is? And of course, it does not. It's just like one of the problems I have when people come to me and say, oh, they're schizophrenic, they're depressed. I say, oh, forget that, for goodness sake. You know, there's no such person who's, it's just this one box fits all. Of all the people who have episodes of schizophrenia, of all the people who have episodes of depression, even all the people who have episodes of flu, there's just every person is totally unique. Even if they've got the same bacteria or virus in them, they express it in a totally unique way. You're not the same as other people. You never will be. You are totally unique and you are welcome on planet Earth, especially in Dhammaloka Buddhist Center. I think this may be the third time I said this in 3 weeks. If you do think you are damaged goods, This is a terrible word which people say. They say, oh, I'm damaged goods. Oh, this terrible thing happened to me. Oh, I'm hopeless. If you are damaged goods, remember you are the beautiful trees in the forest. Crooked, bent, doubled over, branches all over the place, scarred on the outside with branches fallen off in the little holes. Those little holes where the branches fall off, that's actually the nest. Those are the houses of the birds, especially the cockatoos over in our monasteries. You're beautiful. I'd rather see a crooked tree in a forest with all the scars on the bark than see a perfect tree. Perfect trees aren't beautiful. Crooked trees are. What do you prefer? Would you prefer the perfect evening where there's not a cloud in the sky and the sun goes down without making the sunset? You need clouds, a bit of dust, to spread the golds and the crimsons and the purples across the horizon. Without those imperfections, the sunsets aren't glorious. Damaged skies make the best sunsets. And this is teaching you the unconditional love. So there was this Buddha sitting under a tree, just meditating. What does that meditate mean? One of the things which I mentioned during the meditation today was, see if you can allow the mind to be silent instead of thinking so much. I just came back from Melbourne where I gave a whole talk on silence. You know how it happened. I don't know what I was going to talk about, so I went into the hall and I asked the audience, what do you want me to talk about this evening? And they were all silent. So I said, I'm going to talk about silence. That's what you do when you meditate. You get silence inside of you, between your ears. Now, silence is this sacred thing. You know, if you want to have, what is the sacraments of Buddhism? What do you really worship? Not so much the Buddha statue, but you worship silence. You just go to one of our monasteries or the retreat center, and it's so quiet there. You may be even able to touch silence. Can you touch it? Can you feel it? Can you embrace it? I had so many wonderful times with silence in my life. Starting off with when I was a young man, in London, such a busy, busy city and so noisy. But they had these old cathedrals all over the place. And when you went into those cavernous chambers, and there was really thick stone walls, everything became quiet. And I used those as places of refuge. I wasn't a Christian, but I could certainly appreciate the quietness and the silence. It gave you a chance to rest, to recuperate. It's something very therapeutic in silence. What is that therapy of silence? It just calms all that thinking down. It just soaks it up like a sponge soaks up water until there's nothing left, only the silence. Many times I went to those cathedrals until the last time, Westminster Abbey, just before I left to go to Thailand to become a monk. And they'd installed a PA system. That was sacrilege. They might as well just blown up. Terrorists might have just blown up that cathedral for all it did. They destroyed the silence. And there's always announcement going on. Instead of that, I just remember this incredible silent caves I've been into. I remember that occasion I was visiting my family in London. You just do it at Christmas time. Christmas time is family time in Western culture. So I went to England in Christmas. Bad choice. It's so miserable, in London at that time. The old joke. In that time, the sun only comes up about 9:30, sunrise. It goes down again about 2:30. You only get a few hours of sunlight. And, you know, you don't even see the sun because it's all cloudy, all these grey clouds. And if it does rain, it doesn't really rain. It's this depressing, suicidal rain called drizzle. Now, just listen to the word drizzle. And what else is there? The skies are grey. All the buildings are grey. This old grey London stone. Or even the brick is this filthy, yellow, dirty, grey brick. It's mostly grey. All the roads are grey. The pavement is grey. Also, all people wear grey scarves, grey hats, grey shoes. And just to top it off, what tea do they drink? Earl Grey. Really just depressing at that time. But I remember just, I was in this monastery in Sussex. And because I was a visitor, I had no duties. And because I was crazy, one morning after the breakfast, I went out into the forest. That night before, the temperature fell to minus 26 degrees. The monks, they opened the refrigerator doors to keep warm. Okay, that's a joke. They didn't do that. But you get the message. It was freezing. Only mad monks and Englishmen, and I was both, go out in such temperatures. But I would never regret going out. So I went into the forest, and there was nothing alive. Except the silence. No animals were out. They were all hibernating. Same with human beings, that they were in their beds or in their houses with the windows closed. And you had the forest all to yourself. And when you stopped walking, the crunch of the snow vanished. And it was total silence. Nothing stirred. That was bliss. That was magic. That was sacred. If you want to call God anything, that was God. Silence. Nothing moving. Wow. If it wasn't so blooming cold, I would have stayed there. But I remember that to this day. It was powerful, the power of such silence. Now, in that silence, are there any great insights and things to know? Do words come into that silence? Of course they don't. That's the whole point of the silence. All those words and ideas stop. And at last you're free. Even the word, who am I? Am I a man, a monk? Who am I? This stops. You're silent. Totally free. All your past, where you came from, all the journey of your life in the future, whatever that might be, that stops. No birds fly into the future. No memories from the past scurry in the forest floor. Nothing moves. Wow. That's called stillness. And we call that stillness the cause of wisdom in Buddhism. That's what the Buddha did under that Bodhi tree. Got into, you know, when the Waisak night. Incredible, powerful, deep states of stillness. Much more still than the forest in wintertime. And I can tell you that sometimes you think you've got as still as you can possibly can be. Sometimes in meditation you think that you can't get to any more peacefulness than this. And then you get to another layer of peace. A deeper layer of stillness. More weird stuff which you can never imagine. Deeper peace than peace can ever be. I don't know if there's any mathematicians here, but I remember in pure maths at university, I always thought that the biggest number in the world was infinity, until they proved there was another number infinitely bigger than infinity. And there's another number still infinitely bigger than the number infinitely bigger than infinity. Wow, that's weird, but that's actually what you learn in university. The ordinary infinity is alpha null, alpha one, alpha two. It goes all the way to alpha infinity. Infinitely. body more peaceful than infinite peace. Wow. This is weird stuff, but it's good. It goes beyond what you can ever know. It's truth. And never allow your knowledge to stand in the way of truth. That's why you meditate. You've got to let everything go. Let everything go. And as you let everything go, have no fear. Just have this beautiful commitment to weirdness, to truth, to seeing things which are way beyond what you've ever learnt and been told before. Let it all go. And be totally still. And stop judging. Stop adding things. Stop trying to describe them. Stop trying to catch the elephants, the tigers of wisdom, stillness, peace, and put them in the cages of your knowledge. Let that all vanish and be free. You don't have to know. Just be silent. And in that silence, you see the truth. The great saying of the Buddha after he became enlightened, from silence you see the truth, from stillness. For those of you who are listening, who are just making this up, this is Pali, Samadhi Paccaya Yatha Bhuta Jnana Dasana. You may not know that, but some people listening do, and I'm just showing off, giving myself some authenticity. But there we go, an enlightened being arising in this world. And because of an enlightened being, being able to say things and explain things which other people just can't do. This is not book knowledge. That's one of the problems with all these religions. You write it down in a book and then you start worshipping the book instead of where the book came from. The books are just the menus. They're not the food. Please order the food and don't just keep eating the menus, as I keep saying. It's amazing how many people argue about Buddhism. They argue. Now, the Buddha said this, the Buddha said that. Shut up, the Buddha was quiet. Okay, you get it. So you be silent too, and then there's no more arguments. All the different religions, which is the best religion, just be still. That silence is incredible. There. And it's not just being truthful. Incredible therapy of just being silent. You know how terrible it is to have to be thinking and thinking and thinking. It just wears out your brain. And just it's torture. More than any physical torture is the torture people impose on their own brain. Worry, fear, anxiety. And all this stuff going on in your head which just pushes and pulls you, which is so unkind. Thoughts are unkind. Stillness is loving. It can embrace you. It can give you peace and freedom and joy. Just being quiet. And so this is what I always remember on Waisak Day, the silence of the Buddha. That's why on Sunday evening we do this circumambulation. Just in the park over here, we put a Buddha statue in the middle of the park. We go around silently. And even the kids, you know, we try and sort of get some masking tape out so that they can. No, we don't do that. We're pretty kind. But when you get sort of 1,000 people being silent, it's magical. That is the beauty of our celebration. What are we worshipping there? I reckon we say we're worshipping the silence and the truth and the peace, the calmness. It is the idea of peace. When we argue, we're destroying peace, we're destroying our respect for one another. Do we really want to live like that in our world? Just one great little saying which you can write down. If you can't improve upon the silence, be quiet. So often in life, you cannot improve upon silence. We speak too much, especially me. And then finally, this remembers the final passing away of the Buddha, the death, the thing we're all scared of. The thing somebody asked me, can you give a talk? It's a bit late now, but how could you care for someone who's dying? very easy. You let them go. You let them come into your life. Either you took them as a friend, as a lover, took them as a family member. You take them in. You have to let them out. It's a beautiful thing to do. The greatest act of love is to free somebody. You're with them for a while, but you never cage them. And at the end, they're going to fly. They're going to go. They're going to leap out of your life to where? Yeah, we can all sort of have our ideas of what happens after we die. Some of you can know what happens. You may see that. You may know that. But most of you don't. Where they come from, we don't know. Where they go to, we can't follow. They are like the wind. Like the wind which blows past our cheek. We can feel it. It's real. We have this wonderful time. And then the wind is gone. Where it came from, we don't know. Where it blows to, we can't follow. We wouldn't have missed that for the whole world. That is our life. This appreciation of the time we spend together. Whether it's just a few minutes or many years, we're with one another. Respect one another. Have this beautiful love for one another, the unconditional love. You're my friend, my partner, my son, my daughter, my family member. You'll always be that. We had a wonderful time together, a great life. Now I set you free as you set me free. We let each other go. The greatest act of love is to set people free. Going with their nature, going where they need to go, allowing the balloon to soar, allowing the elephant and the tiger to bound through the jungles, unfettered. A wonderful time being here. I'll never forget. But now we go. It's beautiful. When you understand what the death is, yeah, there's a lot of people. They cried when the Buddha was about to pass away. He said, impermanent are all these things. They do come, therefore they must go. We're with each other only for a while. Sometimes you think it's a short while. That's not important. It's not the length of time we're together. It's the quality of that time. The quality of your life, not the length of life. The quality of the time you have with the people who are your friends. If you understand that, at the end of a life, what a wonderful time we've had together. Thank you so much. I let you go. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so that's the talk on Waisak, sort of. Not the usual talk of what happened on Waisak Day, but there we go. So now we do have some questions, comments, or whatever from overseas, and then a few from here. Here we go. From France, from Bangkok, from WA. That's boring. Okay. Here we go from France. I only heard stories about possible reincarnation cases, but there is no concrete scientific studies that tell me there is something to it. Shouldn't extraordinary claims be supported by extraordinary, repeated and cold evidence? Patrick from France, there is strong, concrete scientific studies. The first one was done by Professor Ian Stevenson, STEV for Virginia, ENSON. He was a professor at the University of Virginia, or West Virginia. Amazing studies, rigorously conducted. They are there, but they are totally ignored by people. One of the friends, he was here, Michael, he went to see Professor Ian Stevenson just before he passed away. He got some signed copies of his works, which I think are in our library here, here in Nollamara. And he said he was quite disappointed. This Professor Ian Stevenson, so disappointed that his scientific colleagues dismissed his work, not because of how well it was done, but just because the conclusions were, as Al Gore said, an inconvenient truth. That's why, it's just because it's inconvenient for many people to actually to look at this. The evidence is there, Patrick. Professor Ian Stevenson. And that work has been continued on by many other researchers. It is solid, it is strong, it is convincing. Question 2, David from Bangkok. People here in Thailand consider themselves as Buddhists, but they offer monks mainly food containing meat. There are probably more vegetarians in Europe than in Thailand. How is that possible? Isn't the first precept clear to everyone? No, the first precept is intentionally actually killing those animals. Now, if you've ever killed an animal yourself and you've ever eaten a sausage, there is a huge difference there. We're not saying eating sausages is good. We're just saying there is a difference in ethical power. To actually to kill an animal yourself, to see it alive, to see it sort of looking at you. Because I've only killed an animal once in my life, and that was a mouse. My father had just died. I was being the man of the house. He was terrified of little mice. So I put a mouse trap out, and it worked. I caught that mouse. I heard it go bang, went to look, and there was this beautiful animal, so furry and soft, still warm. And I felt so terrible about that. You could feel it. Now, I wasn't afraid of feeling it. What had I done? I'd taken a life, a beautiful life, and destroyed it. That's the last time I killed an animal. Only a little mouse, but that affected me. So because of that, there's a lot of difference between eating a sausage. Feel it. The ethical power of killing is very different than eating meat which has been from the supermarket. And the Buddha recognized that. Yeah, if you possibly can, it's a good argument there. You can lessen killing, you know, by being a vegetarian. Some people can, some people can't be vegetarians. But at least, please don't be the killer. The first precept is just, you know, putting the boundary, not intentionally killing other living beings. And lastly, Stephen from Western Australia. Where does society go wrong to not have the generosity of spirit to show some compassion for so-called boat people? Why do we lock these desperate people up, so-called the lucky country? Again, this is a lot of time the fear of the other. Sometimes it's greed, sometimes it's these will take our jobs, therefore we won't have enough money for ourselves, blah, blah, blah. There's many people here were refugees from Vietnam. And you can see just how well they've integrated into society. They worked their butts off and just made a life. They're highly respected. But when they first came as well, they were discriminated against. We're afraid of the other. We're afraid. These are economic migrants. Okay, if they've had the nous, the guts and the energy to get here, fine. If they pass that test, then I think that they probably can make a good life over here. So yeah, it is true. Now why can't we be a bit more, I'm being political here maybe, but always into generosity. Maybe what changed my mind was many years ago I was invited to Port Hedland. It was actually for Waysak Day. There was a few Buddhists over in Port Hedland working in the mines, and I went there for the Waysak Day. And one afternoon, having nothing else to do, I went to the refugee camp. I talked to this Cambodian young man. He'd been inside for 3 years. And he talked to me. And the way he said, now these are the words he used, but I can never convey just the pain and the depression which he felt. He said, My mind is dark. I've got no hope, no life. And you've been in there for 3 years with no hope to start a life which would come to a dead end. No way forward. When you see that type of pain, if his leg was ulcered, if his arm was hanging off because of being cut, we'd have compassion for them. But sometimes the pain inside people's minds is what we cannot see. But when they share that with you and they talk with you, sometimes there's this huge amounts of pain. Political. Why do we just can't be compassionate and kind? Okay, you may think they're Tamil terrorists coming in. Okay, allow people to come in. Then we can convert them into being good people. Keep them out and give them some grudge against us, and then they'll always continue their violence. It's what the Buddha said. The anger, ill will, wanting to destroy one race against another race, that never ends with anger. It always ends with forgiveness, with kindness, with love. So I'm actually with you there. Maybe I'm just an impractical old monk, but I would like the openness, the kindness, sharing. Maybe that's what I think. Maybe you disagree with me, but I always think the compassion, kindness is the best way. I may be wrong there. Maybe not really know all the nuances and ins and outs of the boat people, but I've just seen a few, and it's really sad when you're actually in front of one. They're not just a number, not just a photograph in the newspaper or on the TV at night. They're a real person sitting right in front of you. You feel their sadness, you feel their pain. You feel their hopelessness. Think, give them a try. Anyway, any questions from the floor today, from here? Okay, maybe you're not asking any questions because I can see outside the glittering table of munchies to satisfy the whim of your culinary desires. All there waiting for you. So again, thank you all for listening today to a talk on Waysak. I hope it was useful and inspiring and said a few interesting words you can take away with you. And in the meantime, please, if you are free the next couple of days, tomorrow evening we're having the Waysak ceremony in the Sri Lankan temple in Kenwick. So tomorrow, Sunday, is going to be the ceremony here. And there's many things happening over there. And please, I'm always pushing this, the 22nd, the gala dinner to raise funds for a nun's monastery. All the funds, it's $160, but all of that goes to the nun's monastery because people are actually sponsoring, the hotel and all the food. They say, no, we're paying for this. So all the money can go, all your dollars go to the nun's monastery.